Hello, my friends. Welcome to Let's Talk. My name is Shay Marville, and I think one of the most important skills in this world is being able to have a conversation with a friend or a foe. Let's Talk is a podcast about listening, growing, connecting, and hoping through compassion and talking. And I mean really talking about the good things and the hard things, and with remarkable people living in a remarkable time. So let's talk. Hello, my friends. Welcome to Let's Talk on today's show. Oh my goodness. On today's show, I have the great honor of having Courtney Kopic Hopkins with me in the pod. She is a proud Lenape woman of Delaware Nation, Turtle Island, and the Hopkins family. She's a first-generation university graduate, an intergenerational cycle breaker, traveler, thrill seeker, and unapologetic dreamer. As an intuitive urban Indigenous woman, Courtney shares a deep-rooted passion for strengthening the voices of her community. She is a writer, she is a career coach, she is a mentor, and well, Courtney, welcome to Let's Talk. So let's talk. I am so excited to hear and listen and just talk and connect with you. And the reason that I even know of you is that I heard your talk on Raven Speak, and it came through your father, who shared it with me on Facebook. So I'm extremely grateful. Welcome. How are you?
Anishi, thank you.
Anishi.
I'm very well, and thank you for having me.
So now, doing podcasts is starting to get into your blood because you're starting to do more of them. Why is it important for you to share your story?
It's important that I share my truth so I can impact others that have felt similar ways that I've felt, and hopefully allow them to heal from experiences they have had. In sharing my truth, it's giving me the opportunity to heal and to be a voice for those that haven't found theirs or never had a chance or have been silenced. And it's a way that I can connect with other Indigenous peoples and also educate Canadians on experiences of Indigenous peoples across Turtle Island.
Your father made the introduction, and it was because of the poem you wrote. He shared that with me, and I was just blown away by it. And I said to him, like, I need to talk to her and just get, and this was before, I think you wrote that on the 21st or around the 20th, maybe, of June.
So there, did you, like, are you talking about my talk kind of thing?
Yes. That was before, like, you know, some of the things came out around the grave sites. So I was just curious to know, like, what your perspective is on coming out, coming to terms with who you are, and then these revelations that are happening. And I like the idea of us kind of not ever talking before.
Yeah.
You know, what I mean? I kind of like that because that's an important thing, to be able to talk to someone that you haven't had a conversation with before.
Absolutely. So my whole talk that came out, it was a little unfortunate how, I shouldn't say unfortunate, but yes, when it was, the talks were released, it actually got pushed back a couple weeks. Obviously, when the first discovery came out, it wasn't a time any of us wanted to celebrate anything.
No.
And quite possibly none of us even wanted to talk to anyone. You know, it hit me very hard, as it did in, you know, all Indigenous community. So it was actually, I was chosen as one of the 11 emerging leaders, youth leaders across Canada, Turtle Island, Canada, it's kind of like a speaker series TED Talk for Indigenous people. So obviously as that came out, it was something I've kind of put out in the universe for the last couple of years. I've been really working hard, digging deep into who I am, my culture, my identity, and I've realized my identity has prevented me from just being my true self. Obviously, growing up in Oakville, disconnected from my Indigenous side, from my father, from my family, my grandmother, I was completely disconnected from anything Indigenous. Obviously, it's a privileged white community, Oakville. So,
yes,
you know, I definitely stood out as a sore thumb without even, I mean, when you're younger, you're very naive. You don't know that you're different.
Yes,
but as
yes.
I obviously got older, you know, every kid looks the same when you're a kid, you know. My tan skin, I didn't notice that I was a tanned child, really. My brother and I have different dads, so he was fair skin, blonde hair. I was tan, brown skin, brown eyes, brown hair.
Is your mom is not First Nations?
No,
she's not Indigenous.
I don't know what her ancestry fully is, to be honest with you. Mm. But she's white passing. She's white. There's no First Nations in her. But yeah, it comes from my dad. So my dad wasn't in my life until I was about 20. So I knew I was knew I was Native. Didn't really know what that meant. Didn't know it was a bad thing per se until I got a bit older. Once I got into high school, it was the kids around me that taught me what it should be to be an Indigenous person. So, you know, the stereotypes is what I was told. Drunks, you know, lowlifes, living off the government, all the really negative stereotypes of what an Indigenous person is. So obviously, you know, I'm just trying to survive in this privileged white community. I want to fit in. I never, after once I heard that kind of first few times, I thought it was a bad thing to be Indigenous. So
yes.
You know, and I, as I said in my talk, you know, I shared, like I tried to change my appearance to fit in. You know, I dyed my hair blonde. I lied that I was British.
Can I ask, like, what was your mom's role in talking to you about who you are or where you come from? Was she able to do that or no?
Oh, so she wasn't able to do that. Both sides of my family suffer from a lot of intergenerational trauma and addictions. So we didn't have we didn't talk about feelings much. We didn't share, you know, I was always the overly sensitive and stop being so sensitive. You're annoying. You're exhausting. Where really I was just a very curious individual because things weren't making sense and no one was giving me the answers. No one was explaining anything. It was just keep going, keep pushing, keep going. Cause that's what my mom was.
Do you think that's one of the sort of silent privileges of whiteness is that you also do not have to identify with or being a racialized person? So you don't always see what a racialized person might see or what they experience because you just, it's not something that's happening to you.
Absolutely. And I've even experienced that too. You know, when I share with anyone, I've walked in both worlds. I walked in the white world. I've now entered my true self where I'm, you know, around other Indigenous people. And there's a disconnect to both sides. You know, when people would find out I was Indigenous, you know, I'd still hear racism, but in a very different way where they're like, oh, well, you don't look like them. Oh, you know, you have teeth though. Oh, you're the best looking Native person I've ever met. Where it's like, excuse me? How do you even, so because I could, because I'm white passing in winter, let's say, because in summer I go pretty dark and people wonder, you know, what's your background? You're exotic. And then, you know, I'm from here, truly from here. It's a different type of reaction. It's very interesting and it's almost like I shouldn't be offended by it because I don't look how the stereotype is, if that makes sense, you know? So
no, it does.
So Yeah. So growing up, my mom, it just was something we never talked about. My aunties and my grandma on my mom's side, were the only ones who pretty much told me about it. My auntie worked in Northern Ontario when I was a young child. So she was working at the pipeline where there's a lot of Indigenous community up there. So, you know, she'd come down after her shifts and spend a couple weeks with me and wouldn't teach me too much because, you know, she's not a First Nations person, but she would tell me how beautiful like my long hair is and my, you know, she would really empower me, which I didn't even know she was really doing that. But that was my only kind of experience with what it was to be a Native person. It was, I didn't know it was a bad thing, as I mentioned. And it was, as I got older and, you know, I learned what in elementary school, two weeks of hunters and gatherers, whatever that was, you know, that was a little taste of what it was to be an Indigenous person. And then obviously in high school, it was unfortunate that was, you know, what I was taught, which is I'm exactly what, you know, Canada wants. They want me to be the least amount of connected to my culture, you know, washed up into Canadian society. And that I was that for most of my life. I was a very successful, you know, filtered through Indigenous person.
Did you feel torn between your Indigenous identity and your dominant identity? Did you feel like I have to be on one side over the other?
Yeah, that's one way of putting it for sure. I mean, in high school when I was 20 and under, it was, I had to identify with my non-Indigenous side to survive, to blend in, to just get through. And, you know, there's obviously effects of that. I would have experiences where, you know, I was called, I've been a very intuitive person all my life. And I think just tapping into my identity, my Indigenous identity, and taking pride in that. Once I started to do that, opportunities came. I felt grounded. I felt strong. I felt proud. And now that I know what that feels like, I'll never not identify as a proud Indigenous person. Now that I know where I'm from, I know my family now. I'm so proud of my family and the resilience in my bloodline. It's, how can I not identify by that?
It's incredible, isn't it? Like, I mean, we talk so much about, and we have to, you know, we have to tell the stories of our ancestors and the peoples that are marginalized right now, right? Mm-hmm. But I think it's strange that people try to make you feel ashamed of being a racialized person or Indigenous person, because I just feel like when you look at history, there's so much data that demonstrates the resilience of these human beings. And so we shouldn't be at all ashamed. We should be actually saying, my God, like, look at what I've emerged from.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's exactly how I stand today. That's how I identify. And it's unfortunate, obviously, those years I didn't do that. And of course, that I had to grieve through that process of, you know, not honoring that side of who I am. And if I had done this sooner, I wonder where I would have been, or if I wouldn't have had as many struggles as I did. But, you know, I use my voice that I have now reclaimed, and I stand in my truth and identity, and I advocate for those who've lost their voice, who've been silent, who experience all the struggles that Indigenous people face in their own lands, you know. And I'm very held and called to do that, and I'm honored to be able to speak up, to use, you know, my fancy degrees that, you know, it's what you need to kind of make it in Western society. But to me, that's just what I've kind of had to do to be able to sit at the table with non-Indigenous people. And then really that hardly means anything to me. You know, I honor the culture and the teachings and, you know, the stories way above you know, this, the institutions and the fancy pieces of paper. So
did you know your father before you reconnected with him when you were 20?
Yeah. So I have very few memories of, with my father. I maybe can count on a hand how many kind of relationship kind of encounters we had, but I didn't see him for years. You know, there's many things I don't remember as well. But he pretty much, it was more, my mom's like, you're in or you're out. It doesn't just, you don't come and go as you please, which,
yes,
you know, and I acknowledge that. And I'm in a sense grateful for that, because a lot of people I meet whose parents have divorced and, you know, they see their dad every other weekend or whatever, I find there's more effects to that than, mm-hmm, I just didn't know different. It was my mom, and she was a very strong, independent woman, and she was both. She provided, she did what she could, so I can have a good life, and I'm grateful for that, and I'll forever be thankful for that. But there was still that emotional piece and that identity piece really affected me. Mm. And that really, that's something I've had to do a lot of work in the last couple of years, to just dig deep into who I am and the effects of not acknowledging a part of who I was and not having the opportunity to do that. So I don't blame either one of my parents, really. Like, that doesn't do anything for me.
They're doing the best, you know, that they knew how at the time. And
totally. And, you know, my dad at the time wasn't able to be a present father. It's unfortunate that we couldn't have more memories together, but I mean, we've had a lot of tough conversations and honest conversations, and I absolutely adore him now.
Yes. Yeah.
And I'm grateful for his teachings, and I'm grateful that, it's interesting, right? Like, he's half of me. So when we connected, when I first, you know, reconnected with him, we just were like this instantly. And, you know, we would have deep conversations about nothingness for 20 minutes. And then that was it. That was fine. It was like, okay, see ya. And like, that's what I've been longing for without even knowing I needed that. But that's the piece of me that I can now complete, you know? So yeah, I knew who he was. I have a couple memories, you know, where we went out for dinner a couple times. But I didn't know him. He wasn't present in my life. So
it sounds also like getting to know him as an adult meant there was like a key unlocking a part of your life. So that brought in your grandmother and other, you know, relatives, right?
Absolutely. You know, I've always dreamed of having a big family and, you know, having big gatherings, and you hear people growing up where it's, you know, Christmas and Thanksgiving, and these events would sound amazing. I'm like, wow, it sounds like the movies, because mine was not like that. You know, it would be very opposite and very sad. I found those kind of experiences weren't enjoyable to me, where I'd be talking to my friends and I'd almost lie sometimes, being like, oh yeah, it was great. Just cause it wasn't great, but I didn't understand. I didn't know why I didn't know my grandma or my uncles. And, you know, I've always had many cousins. I've always had many uncles and a beautiful grandmother. And I was just disconnected from it, but I've always had it. And I think just, again, acknowledging that I have a very big family that stands behind me and is very proud of me, I think has been a huge part, again, of my healing journey. And just, yeah, but the more I learn too, right, the more I learn about colonization and,
yes,
I was exactly
the destruction.
Yeah, they assimilated me into, you know, the Western society, disconnected me from my family, my culture, and just a modern day society.
Mm-hmm. So, well, what was it like meeting your grandmother? Because she's a very, very strong human being who's also been through a lot.
Herself. Yeah, it was. Yes, I absolutely adore my grandmother. She's such a strong, grounded woman. We connect so strongly on just I just have so much love for her. She, in recent, you know, conversations we've had in light of the discoveries that they're finding with the residential schools, we've had kind of very emotional conversations. And, you know, she's realizing that the way she was treated wasn't how Canadians were treated. You know, she went to Indian day school and didn't know that the things she experienced in that school weren't what every other child was experiencing. She didn't even realize that she went to Indian day school. She knew she didn't like going to school every day. She knew she was backed away into a corner every day. She knew she'd be strapped if, you know, she couldn't read what was on the board immediately. Like, a lot of experiences she shared with me just show, you know, how she's been treated and the effects of that. You know, she's had to work on, she's a very, very very strong Indigenous woman. She doesn't like that word. She likes Native. She mm-hmm. likes from here. But she, you know, she's been through a lot. And same with her. She's one of the, you know, the last of her siblings alive. A lot of her, you know, cousins she grew up with and friends have passed on. But they all, a lot of them went to residential school. And even today, my grandma is like, I don't know why we didn't have to go. Mm-hmm. Which I, when I kind of piece things together, her grandmother, so my great great grandmother, went to residential school. And I think she hid the kids when the Indian agents would come in and collect the kids. I really think her grandmother, my great great grandmother, protected them and probably hid them literally in the basement when they were coming around, because my grandma's memories of, yeah, I remember the kids would go for a couple years and I wouldn't know where. And then, you know, family members would come back to the community very upset, obviously going to visit them at the Mohawk Institute. And they stopped going because it was too heartbreaking to see the kids wanting to leave in agony and sadness. And it was too hard on the parents to say goodbye when they weren't allowed to bring their kids home that were literally stolen from their home. So
devastating.
Devastating. Yeah, there's lots of things that, you know, my grandma doesn't, she didn't know differently. But when we talk, she doesn't have a memory of her mom being around from the age of 6 and under. And I'm like, grandma, that's not a normal thing to experience, you know? And she's like, maybe that's why, you know, grandma and my mom couldn't hug me and kiss me, show me affection. You know, she's like, I knew they loved me, but, you know, she didn't have that kind, nurturing, loving, warm embrace that Canadians got to experience. So there's effects of that. There's intergenerational effects of that trickle down through our people and to me, to my father.
Yes. You know? And the pain that is never spoken. I feel very emotional just listening to you, because I think it's so painful, all these things that are coming out, but at the same time, so necessary. I feel like if we don't hear these things, then we won't believe that this is the truth. But now there's no turning away. It's like, it's almost as though these little voices are coming from the grave saying, we're still here.
Yeah, absolutely. And we are still here. My grandma says it probably every time we're on the phone. I'm still here. We're still here. And that's so, so powerful to me. It's been obviously a very emotional couple weeks, but this isn't a secret to any Indigenous person. We've been talking about this and advocating about this and trying to grieve through this, but until, you know, the truth, people needed to physically have proof. Now they believe us. So I moved through waves of different feelings, obviously a lot of sadness the first couple of days, but then a lot of anger came to me as well, where, you know, how are people still living their lives as if, you know, like our entire nation should be mourning this. These are little human beings that were taken and buried, and they never had a voice. They never were, a lot of them weren't even given a name. It was a number. And it's just, it's so sad. It's so heartbreaking. And I mean, obviously we have to keep moving forward, and there's so many of us still advocating about this, but it definitely was waves of different feelings where my non-Indigenous friends and allies were still out living their life as if, you know, oh, that's really sad.
Mm-hmm.
And now,
let me ask you this though. Don't you think that some of the inability to grieve some of the stories that are coming forward is about Western culture's denial process, Western culture's emotional suppression process. I think that's an element of this, you know, this idea that you know, excuse me, emotions are a weakness. You know, grief is something you have only for a short period of time, maybe only for people that you know. You know, I think that that's not all of Western culture, but I think that is part of it. And so we're like this thing that's happening, I feel like it's also this confrontation around not just rights and equity and justice, but about us as human beings emotionally. You know, why do some of us feel so deeply impacted by this? And why do some not?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's where I have to remember that I have to be patient. I'll always remain hopeful, but it's also a time where I'm like, people, it's not a time to be silent and reflect. Now's the time we need allies to act with us, to stand up, to speak up to racism, to speak out when things are said that are ignorant. It's, and also to educate yourself. There's really no excuse. I had to do it myself about my own history of my people. You know, it's 2021. People all know how to use a phone, how to use the internet. There's so many resources and data and books and movies and podcasts out there that I struggle for that, you know, people to what is your excuse? What is the excuse? I understand that, you know, we all take things on differently, but we didn't have a chance to, you know, have these moments. You know, we've never been given that chance. I think now Canadians can step up and do their part. Mm-hmm. Because we didn't do this to ourselves. This was Canada. So
yeah.
This is
the Canadian story. It's part of the Canadian story, all of it. And we, you know, you have to, it's like being a human being, right? Like you're not all good. You're not all bad. There's these parts and you have to recognize them in order to grow into something more or something better. I'm curious about you coming to terms with yourself as an Indigenous woman and what that means for where you're going and why you're doing these talks and sharing your story. Why is that so important to you right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it is being a voice for our younger generations. It's moving forward in a good way to educate those around me, to acknowledge my truths and my experiences, and honor my culture and my family and pride myself on it. I think that knowing your truth and owning your truth is what I think we all, you know, are destined to do while we, you know, travel through this journey. And I think it just brings so much strength and pride. And, you know, if I can impact someone who have experienced similar things that I have, which I'm learning and sharing circles and everything, that a lot of people also experience the same things that I've gone through, you know, not being Native enough, having to prove your Nativeness, which is ridiculous, but that was my struggle. You know, I wasn't Native enough. What does it mean to be Native? Like, if I can impact someone to experience that earlier on and get that story out of their head,
yeah,
that is what I want to do. I want to inspire younger people. I want to inspire youth. I want to inspire women. I want to be the voices for those that never had one, but also show everyone else that we're still here. We're not going anywhere, and we're going to use our voices and our messages and our teachings to bring hope to Canadians, I think, to, you know, bring hope to Indigenous people across the lands that we can do it. We're capable, we're resilient, and just, you know, honor all those gifts we've been given. And I think there's a lot. Like, I think it's just in sharing my story, I'm able to heal and help others heal. And I think that's the biggest part of sharing my talk, sharing my journey and my truths and experiences. It's so we can all heal.
I think it's very powerful to hear someone share so intimately and openly about the process they're actually going through. And one of the things I really appreciate about what you're doing is also sharing your relationship with your dad, because I think, you know, sometimes we have these, you know, stereotypes of what a parent and child's relationship should be, or what a perfect, in quotes, family is. And it sounds like there's this new opportunity for you both to become something else to one another. And I think that's also a really great model for other people to hear and to see, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I mean, it's been hard doing the work. It's been hard to forgive. It's been hard to have those. Well, I wouldn't say it's too hard. I actually like having very direct conversations. And my dad does as well. So, you know, that part's been, I actually enjoy that part, but I've been longing for, you know, honest conversation. And I've been longing for an emotional connection with my parents. And again, as I said, I'm so grateful for that.
And how's your relationship with your mom? What's that like now? Like,
At the moment we're disconnected. Again, I'm so grateful for everything she provided for me. But as I've begun this healing journey of, you know, really identifying my truths and who I am, I'm realizing that there was effects of not having that emotional connection. And I don't think my mom knows how to emotionally connect with me. Mm. So it's unfortunate. It was very sad. And it's funny because usually I'm always crying. Like, I'm such a crier. I like people be like, how are you? And I'll just cry. And I think in sharing my talk, I've gotten so much stronger because it's, you know, I'm owning things a bit more, but
I'm laughing because I'm a crier too. That's
Really, you know, and I'm just like, well, I have to just own it because I mean, I'm like, okay, I'm a crier. So like, it just, why am I trying to pretend like I'm not when I am? But yeah, at the moment we're disconnected, which is unfortunate. But I just don't, I had to set boundaries, you know, I had to really figure out what works for me and what doesn't. And I feel like we use that word boundaries a lot, and I didn't really even know what it meant, but I now do, because it was consuming me and it was preventing me from moving forward. So I had to, for the time being, we're not connected, but I don't know if we will be at all. But I mean, I think she's, the lessons I was meant to learn from my mom, I've learned. She's giving me, you know, determination and strength, and that those are the teachings that she's kind of instilled in me. Keep going.
And a foundation, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think also, are you a mom? You're not a mom.
No.
So I'm a mom, and I've just lost my mom. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I take great solace in is that time changes many things. Mm-hmm. And I think the one thing I'm really grateful for with my mom is that the more times we could be honest with each other, like if you know, over many decades, that kind of honesty, and even when it's not happy and it's not, when you're not agreeing, especially when it's not agreeable, I think that creates an authentic life together. And that serves you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, perfect example is my dad and I, you know?
Yeah, totally.
I never in a million years would think, A, that it would be my dad and I like this.
Yes.
And that I would be speaking to my dad and not speaking to my mom. That even still sometimes I'm, what?
Yeah.
Did I ever pick a picture? I'm like, oh yeah, my dad this, my dad that. Like, I didn't even say dad until I was 20. Like, it's a very, it's not even bizarre because, I mean, it is what it is. But yeah. I've been able to forgive him because we've had those honest conversations where I didn't like what he had to say, he didn't like what I had to say. But it's like we listened to each other and we gave each other the space to just be heard and to acknowledge the way I was feeling and how that affected me. And he's done that. It wasn't, you know, an instant thing. It's taken some work, but at the same time, like, it actually hasn't at the same time too. Like, we're so, so similar and connected that it's just, it's good. Like, he's so
fascinating. Yeah. It's fascinating, right? When you meet people in your life, whether they're biological people or not, whether or not you're available to meet them where they are and whether or not they're available to meet you where you are. Yeah, so
absolutely. And that's, and it worked out in our journeys that we weren't ready to meet until, yes, you know, I was 20. But I reached out to him. I was, you know, one day I was like, I'm just gonna call him up, and I did exactly that. And you know, just me, bold and fiery, and but also very sensitive. So it's like,
yes,
you know, I try to be all whatever, but I now realize, even like looking at who I was and everything, like I was trying to be something I wasn't, like physically, literally, and just, you know, even emotionally, I was trying to be this guarded, angry, whatever. And not me. It wasn't me. It's never been me, but it was just what I was shown for most of my life. And no, like, it is what it is, really. Like, and I don't say that just pushing it aside. I mean, I've done the work, but, and I'm still doing the work.
And the work continues. It's just going to continue as long as we're living.
Yeah, keep going. So I think just it's definitely been, it is a journey. And I've grown so much though. I think the biggest thing for me was, as soon as I graduated uni, I booked a plane ticket. I said it in my talk, like I literally decided I had no money in my bank account. I had a little bit, and just went to the other side of the world. And that was the first time I was truly away from the world I knew. You don't know different, right? And it's, your world can stay this small. And unfortunately for a lot of people, it does stay that small, but I've been on a mission to, I don't know, push boundaries and just go for things and just follow what's calling. And
I love it. I really appreciate it. Can you share at all any of your talk with us right now?
Sure. Yeah, I can do that.
I'd really appreciate that. I think our listeners would really appreciate it. And I'm glad that you're talking and that you're going to keep talking, because I think talking actually helps us to heal.
Absolutely. It's
just like listening.
Yeah. Sorry. No, absolutely. It's honoring your truth and sharing your story, and in doing that, it's very powerful. And I encourage everyone to do it. Mm-hmm. Earlier the better.
Yes. Yeah.
It truly is a weight lifted off, but it also gives you an opportunity to heal, but you're also helping others heal and sharing your truth. So,
yes.
Yeah. Sure. So do you want me to just...
Yeah, just go for it. I do think also there's great value and intelligence in being an outlier and living outside of the boundaries of the society. I kind of think it's neat that you and I never met in person, but both have lived in Oakville.
You're a neighbor. Yeah, I was a Oakville from like 8 till 22. So,
yeah, that's interesting. We'll have to talk about that one day. That's a story in itself.
Yes, I don't know if you, yeah, totally, totally. Okay, let's see what I've got. And it's unfortunate because I had to actually shorten my talk because of the timing, but I have a lot to say, but that's okay.
Maybe just share a part of it with us, any part you want.
Here. To the girl with the long brown hair, are you native enough? The story, pain, anger, and misunderstanding, the color, heartache, and sadness. Are you native enough? You see your legs, your knees, your feet down below. You are different, confused, and questioning. Are you native enough? Do the sky, the birds, and Grandmother Moon wonder? Are you native enough? The conflict around my identity runs thick within my blood. And through my healing journey, I've had to dig deep into why. Why do I experience conflict around my Indigenous identity? Why have I struggled to feel safe and secure in my own skin? I've been surviving, walking in both worlds, trying to navigate the uncomfortably familiar colonial world in my newly reclaimed Indigenous lens. My life's journey has been a weave of obstacles of confusion in order to reclaim who I am. I was raised to be a strong, powerful, independent woman. My dad had left me before we had the chance to create any memories, disconnecting me from my family. I miss it on the support of my many uncles, the connection to my cousins, in the bond with my beautiful grandmother. Raised by a single mom who had her own pain, addictions, and secrets, made sure I wouldn't experience half the things she had gone through, made sure I was always busy, always moving. There was never time to rest. Rest demonstrates weakness. I was conditioned to always do more, be more, 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 more. Why wasn't me enough? This affected me. I wasn't allowed to show vulnerability. I wasn't encouraged to share my thoughts. I wasn't asked to feel any feelings. There simply wasn't the time or space to do this. Why was I tormented for being me? Quit being so sensitive. Ugh, you're exhausting. Why do you have to question everything? I learned very quickly that the person I was needed to change. At 15, I was running away from who I was on the inside, and thought I could pretend and fool others from the outside. These were the years I heard comments, natives are drunks, they're lowlifes who live off the government. I'd be confronted with questions like, what? You're native? You can't be full native. What's your percentage? As if it was any of their business to know. Here I was, in a privileged white community, absent father, alcoholic mother, no family ties. The list went on. It doesn't take long to be influenced by those around you. I was desperately wanting to fit into a world that wasn't accepting of me.
Oh, chills. Wow. Thank you. I think the thing is, when someone tells their truth, it frees someone else.
Absolutely.
So.
And yeah, absolutely. And it's been a gift to be able to share my truth, to find the strength to share these experiences, again, for myself and for my family and for other Indigenous people that have experienced and still experience these types of things. Mm-hmm. So that's been, it's been a journey and still is a journey, but I'm forever grateful for my family, for my beautiful grandmother, for her wisdom and knowledge, and for the relationship with my dad. They've taught me a lot, and, they've allowed me, you know, to see the world proudly through an Indigenous lens. So that's something, you know, no one can take away from me. That's what I'll do. That's what I can do moving forward. So,
well, I'm so grateful and I'm so appreciative of your voice and your courage. And I think that, you know, when we say, you know, there's work for people to do, all people, I think when you do this, you are creating space for other people to enter the room to do the work. So.
Absolutely. Anishi,
thank you, my friend.
I learned I'm not overly sensitive. I'm intuitive. I'm not exhausting. I'm passionate. I am forgiving and will continue to show this as I move forward in my life. I'm sharing this story for younger me who desperately needs to know this. My journey is about reconnection to my kinship, my dad, and most importantly, my grandmother, the matriarch of my existence. These relationships have allowed me to see the world proudly through an Indigenous lens. My grandma told me, I need to remember my heritage. I need to remember to live in harmony with my creator. I need to be accepted for what I am. This is the medicine I've needed. I now embrace my culture. I'm learning my traditions. I take pride in my Indigenous identity. Reconnection has allowed me to be comfortable in my own skin, so I can move forward in a good way. I encourage you all to expand your world, whether that's through travel, love, cultural connection, forgiveness. Be gentle to yourself. Honor your gifts. Be the love you needed when you were younger. Trust the spirit world to guide you. Our ancestors are walking with us every step of the way. We are our ancestors' wildest dreams. I stand here today as the girl with the long brown hair, a strong, grounded Lenape Native woman from Delaware Nation, gifted the Indian name Little Fawn from my grandmother, who was enough, who is enough, who will continue forward reminding us all that we are wholeheartedly enough.
Thank you for joining the conversation. We are growing an amazing community here at Let's Talk. Please share the show. Make sure you're subscribing and keep talking. And you can always reach out to me at CoachShayMarville.com or on Instagram at ShayMarville. Let's talk. Let's keep talking.